Good evening, and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, September 28, 2017. Sexual violence against women and girls is widespread in South Sudan.
It ranges from rape, physical assaults, sexual assaults. We have child marriage, which contributes the bigger form, and then domestic violence.
And officials in Yei say the number of suicide attempts and deaths by suicide is climbing.
Mostly it is women and youths. Getting food is a problem. And then as women, they think very limited, and then that's how they commit suicide.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations says gender-based violence, including rape, child marriage, and domestic violence, remains very high in South Sudan. UN officials say sexual violence against women and girls can be reduced by allowing more women to occupy top positions in government. Nabil Biagio reports for VOA from Juba.
UN Population Fund gender analyst Viola Riak says gender-based violence is rampant across South Sudan.
In South Sudan, we have various types of gender-based violence, range from rape, physical assaults, sexual assaults. We have child marriage, which contribute the bigger form, and then domestic violence. And most of this violence are perpetrated by intimate partners.
A child protection specialist working with UNICEF in South Sudan says gender-based violence is not only widespread in South Sudan. Sir Eric Denter, who has worked in Guinea, Burundi, Ethiopia, and Haiti to reduce sexual violence, says, during the nearly 4 years of fighting in South Sudan, many women have been the victims of gender-based violence, or GBV.
You have complex factors that are perpetrating GBV in South Sudan, so the conflict, displacement, separation of families and communities. So I think this is the one of the differences that I have seen among the countries that I have been working in.
Denter says South Sudan has laws and regulations that are supposed to protect women and girls, but the laws are not enforced due in part to ongoing fighting. He says South Sudan can learn from other countries where gender-based violence was commonplace.
What South Sudan can learn from those countries is that once you are able to identify the issue and start to address the issue from the causes, then you can put systems in place that can respond. So which at the moment is a problem because of the war, because of insecurity, so access to most of the locations is difficult, and also response services are not there at the moment.
Joy Zakariawani is a program officer at UN Women in South Sudan. She says sexual violence can almost be eliminated in South Sudan if women are allowed to get directly involved in legislating and executing laws that fight gender-based violence.
We see in our country there is inequality which is happening, power relation between men and women in the decision-making, in the leadership. We can see that the percentage of women in the decision-making, in the high level, the senior management, they are not there.
Ketevan Kamashides, a community-based protection officer with the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, says sexual violence against women and girls is particularly high among South Sudanese refugees and internally displaced persons who are traumatized by the conflict.
Stress and trauma and maybe depressions. So that's why some people cannot overcome and they start abusing their family members. So it means that refugee and IDP communities having been displaced are even in a harsher situation than host communities.
Kamashida says, in most cases, victims of gender-based violence do not report their perpetrators to authorities because of fear of revenge and social stigma.
GBV is the most unreported type of violation because people don't go and don't report, fearing that they will be targeted by the society members, fearing that they will be isolated by their families. They fear that they will not have any future if they declare this.
And when they don't report, they don't have access to legal, counseling, and medical services that would otherwise be available to them. Riak says the media can help educate people about the need to report sexual violence, but says it is imperative that the victims be protected during the process.
We emphasize the issue of ethical reporting. As we do our work, let's not subject the survivors of gender-based violence to more harm. So when you're reporting, you need to make sure that the environment where you are interacting with the survivor is conducive. It is safe. You don't reveal the name of the survivor because that could actually lead to traumatize the survivor more. You don't reveal the location where the survivor is.
Some communities in the former Eastern Equatorial region have still not outlawed wife beating. In the Latuku community, for example, wife beating is considered a sign of love. Yesterday's forum in Juba was organized by the United Nations Population Fund, the UN Children's Fund, and UN Women. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
Another problem connected to the nearly four-year-long conflict is South Sudan's high rate of suicide, and it is especially high in Yei River State. The Catholic Church in Yei is offering trauma counseling to residents who saw people kill themselves. More than 20 suicide attempts and 5 deaths have been reported so far this month in Yei River State. Daniel Friday Martin has more for VOA from Yei.
John Mawa is a senior counselor at the Catholic Diocese Counseling Center in Yei Town. Mawa says most of the suicidal patients his office sees are young men and women.
We have so far registered 21 cases, and out of these, 3/4 of them are having suicidal attempt cases. Mostly it is women and youths. Getting food is a problem. And then as women, they think very limited, and then that's how they commit suicide. The youths are also facing the same challenges, but there's nothing to do now. And some of them are also married. They find their family responsibilities heavy.
A suicide survivor whom we shall identify only as Viola says she tried to kill herself when her husband abandoned her with 4 children. She says she attempted to commit suicide, but she did not die.
The reason as to why I wanted to commit suicide was that my marriage was not good. My husband left me with all the 4 children and ran to Juba. He could no longer support me, but I decided to kill myself by drinking 5 liters of locally made alcohol. I attempted to commit suicide by throwing myself into Yei River, but I was rescued by a friend who took me to the church for counseling and prayers.
Suicide attempts include drowning in a river, alcohol poisoning, hanging, or shooting themselves. A Yei resident we will identify as Lado says he witnessed a family member shoot himself.
The problem is salary is not at time. Just abruptly, he said that he has no money, but we tried to counsel him, we tried to advise him. He couldn't listen to us, and then he shot himself. My message, all of us need to work for peace.
Reconcile International, a non-governmental organization in Yei, is also offering trauma healing and recovery services to families affected by ongoing violence in South Sudan. Mustafa Adams is the organization's program manager. He says the war has affected residents of Yei Town.
Because of trauma, people are doing things that are not supposed to be done. There was a man, because of some domestic-related issues, he decided to cut his manhood, but we are trying to conduct a training basically to empower the communities to regain their hope. Because of the conflict, there are a lot of issues happening. So trauma issue is really alarming, especially here in Yei.
Victoria Nasra, the Director General for Gender and Social Development in Yei River State, says drug abuse is also to blame for the high rate of suicide in Yei. Nasra is asking NGOs to offer psychosocial and services to drug abusers.
These young men, sometimes they take this drug, something like marungi and other, to at least relieve them from stress. But it increases and it makes them at the end drunk and attempt to commit suicide. And then also some people, a sickness is not curable, they attempt also suicide. I really urge all the organizations and even the government at least to start raising some awareness to the communities, because things are happening bad in the communities.
Researchers say many people who attempted suicide say they don't necessarily want to die but want to end their pain, emotional or physical. An article in the medical journal eMedicine Health concludes that people who commit suicide have a mental illness. This includes depression, bipolar disorder, anxiety, or cystic hernia. Experts write in a journal that mental illness also includes alcohol abuse, such as binge drinking and a dependence on drugs. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Yei.
Local officials in Uganda's Lamo district say some 2,000 unaccompanied children have crossed into Uganda from South Sudan. Ugandan officials say they are struggling to care for so many children, some of whom require urgent medical care. As Demo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba, community leaders at a refugee settlement along the South Sudan-Uganda border say they are overwhelmed. Demo Silva Aurelio has the details for VOA from Juba.
The Palabek refugee settlement camp in Lamuo district in Uganda hosts about 43,000 South Sudanese refugees who fled to Uganda in March during fighting in Imatong Estate's Parajok between government forces and rebels loyal to Riek Machar. Officials with the UN High Commissioner for Refugees say out of the estimated 100 refugees they receive every month, at least 20 are unaccompanied minors between the age of 7 and 17 from Palabek. A 17-year-old minor at the Palabek, whom we will identify as Ochira, is staying with foster parents. Ochira says after his parents fled Parajok in March, he was left behind with a neighbor. The two of them fled to a nearby village where they stayed for more than 4 months. They finally traveled on foot to a refugee camp in Uganda. Ochira says he still does not know where his parents are or even if they are alive. Philip Okumu is a child protection officer with a group Association of Frontiers International in Palabek Ogili refugee camp. Okumu says the Uganda Red Cross mobile team brings dozens of children to his organization each month to try to identify the kids and find their parents.
Now we are doing the connectivity with the Red Cross either here in Palabek or in Uganda. They used to transfer them from different camps. If you requested that you need a family union, they used to transfer them that side from that place where your parent is. They used to transfer and then they bring it together.
David Wangwe, the camp commandant at Palabek, says the camp receives 20 to 30 minors every day.
In every convoy that we bring, we identify the children. They are there. It depends on the number of people received on a daily basis. Sometimes we receive like 120.
UNHCR Senior Field Coordinator in Uganda, Jens Hessman, says the number of unaccompanied minors could be more than 2,000.
The total number of refugees entering Uganda from South Sudan is somewhere between 100 and 800 people a day over the last month. That's the average, I would say, between 100 and 800 people a day.
Hessman says they have been able to reunite some children with their parents. He says his office is working with other agencies to help the unaccompanied children resettle in Uganda.
When we identify a separated child, the best interest of that child is determined. Would that child be in a foster family because the parents can be found? Or can we maybe, with the tracing and the help of the Ugandan Red Cross, can we trace their family? So there are different options and efforts going into this, and eventually the best interest is determined and the child receives the appropriate assistance.
UNHCR says since the fighting began in South Sudan, 2 million refugees have entered Uganda, which has severely impacted funding. In May, the World Food Programme cut in half refugees' food rations due to the large number of refugees arriving from different parts of South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Demo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. What happened after 2 days of talks on how to run fresh elections in Kenya? Find out when we return.
South Sudanese in the diaspora have mixed reactions about what is happening in their country. This week, South Sudan in Focus host John Tanza engages the diaspora in a spirited discussion about what South Sudanese should do to bring peace in their country.
Unity is possible when we stop the hate.
What are we not doing to bring peace to our country?
The voices of the diaspora on ending the conflict in South Sudan. This week on South Sudan in Focus.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
would you give up your nationality
order to acquire another one?
I wouldn't give up my nationality, firstly, because I love my country and I know I can do something to change what is surrounding me.
Giving up my nationality, it greatly depends. In the first case, yeah, I would, because me being a Ugandan by nationality, it has so much happened that in Uganda there's a lot of corruption, and then we also take time to invest in education. The much money we invest is not what we harvest.
I wouldn't give up my nationality for another because I really love my country, and I don't see the reason as to why I should give it in like to a different country when I'm proud of my country.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese in the diaspora have mixed reactions about the role of the international community in ending the violence across South Sudan. Community leaders and activists in the United States say while they appreciate the role played by the international community in helping South Sudanese, they believe the solution to South Sudan's conflict is in the hands of South Sudanese. My colleague John Tanza holds talks with some in the diaspora on the contributions of the international community toward ending the crisis.
My name is Kwaja Lasu. I'm speaking to you this afternoon in my capacity as South Sudanese rather than my political affiliation. We need to accept the fact that there's a problem and the solution is in our hands. Not necessarily that we have to call the international community, what have you. They can be a tool to help us move to the next level. However, we, the South Sudanese, the inside.
So what are these tools?
The tools.
Let us talk in specifics as opposed to being general.
The tools specifically, we have to genuinely engage each other, not in a propagated way by advancing one interest or one agenda against the other. We need to be genuinely addressing the issue that facing us in South Sudan through the root cause.
Nyamal, just first of all, tell us where you're from.
My name is Nyamal Chudel. Since there's two of us on the table that are named Nyamal, I'll just use Mal. And I'm South Sudanese American, been here for 21 years, and I'm coming from Pennsylvania. I do agree and I disagree with brother here. I do agree that we genuinely need to be honest in all of our conversation with one another because, again, you know, we're hurt people. So when we're talking to people, hurt people, and heal people, heal people. So we need to come to
that's,
that.
That's philosophical. Can you get to the bottom of the basics? Okay. Hurt people, heal people.
Yeah, so basically, if I'm hurting and I'm speaking, then I will be hurting him. And that's where, you know, there won't be any healing component here. But if I've healed and I'm speaking to him in a healing perspective, then he's also going to be healed because I'm recognizing him as a human being. He has feelings like I do, and I hope in turn he will also recognize. And that's where I agree is just let's be honest with one another. You know, like international community is not going to solve our problems because we know ourselves best. I'm sorry to say this, but the ego, the testosterone in Junoop is killing Junoop. The women are the one losing everything. They're the one losing husbands. They're the one losing children. They're the one losing everything while the men are benefiting and just keeping their ego.
Well, Atem, you're listening and you're silent. This is an attack on you, on men, saying that we are part of the problem. But just introduce yourself and tell us.
Well, thank you. I am Atem Ding. The issue of South Sudan as a country, myself, I don't like it. Why? The same people who had died during the war, innocent, are the ones dying now. Mm-hmm. Let's forget our tribes and just start loving South Sudan as a country. So my advice is South Sudanese. I'm advise myself to everyone that let's stop hate speeches. We know what happened has happened. Mm-hmm. And we need to forget it and stop the death by coming together and be peaceful. Whatever our kids are seeing now is not a very good example.
Let's go to Nyamal, the other Nyamal here. She's listening. Looks like you have something to say. Tell us where you're coming from and then just respond to Atem.
My name is Nyamal Days. I'm from Fargo, North Dakota, and I've been to the United States for almost 23 years. For me, I'm hurt for all that thing that are happening in our country. It is shameful, and we're not even proud of who we are anymore. Like for me, it's very hard for me to say I'm a South Sudanese.
That's a very strong statement to make. Why?
The reason why is because we hate each other as a tribe. In order for us to bring peace within South Sudan, we have to learn to forgive each other. We can't go back to the past, like 1991, for example, like people use. We have to know the root cause of why we come here from the beginning. What happened? What is it there that we need to do as a community? We have to look at the whole picture. For example, I'm in the United States here. We're being discriminated because of our skin color. We can't get job because of just the different economic or just being black, period. You know, when you try to say you're proud of your country, but at the same time, you can't even go to your country. Mm-hmm. So I can't go to Juba.
Let's listen to our elder here. He's sitting quietly, and let me give you the chance to introduce yourself and join us in this discussion.
My name is Pastor James Roy. I came from Nebraska. Well, this discussing is really huge. Even I myself, I'm a pastor. I supposed to preach peace. Sometimes when I came to this discussing, sometimes I am speechless. I don't know what where that I could say it and describe what I could do to bring peace in this country. We are so many tribes. If we cannot come together and sit down as a community and go by the root cause and say sorry to ourselves, there is no peace in this country.
Yep.
Let's come together and sit down and say sorry to each other and the peace will come. Second to that, I blame the regions. And also I blame the world, like the Twaika, and the region has the IGAD. I blame the region.
Do you agree with him? Let's give a chance to him.
My name is Atem Malak. I don't think we should put all our blame on international community. Like, I was listening to some of our leaders that I will not mention in South Sudan, and they were talking about, international community should do this. International community should give us a way forward. And the question I asked was, so why the heck are you leading then if you want the international community to solve South Sudanese problem? If you cannot take care of your mess in your room, why do you expect others to come and solve that issue? Forget the international community. What can we do as people? And this is why I like your question when you say, what can we do as South Sudanese? I think the question could be framed that what are we not doing to bring peace to our country?
Yeah, let's change it. Let's transpose it to say what are we not doing to bring peace in the country?
And if you think about it, what we are not doing as people is disassociating ourselves with these so-called leaders of South Sudan, either Riek or Kiir or whatever leader that come up and try to divide our people. Because when you think about what they're doing, they're benefiting from what we are suffering. Like some people mentioned earlier, that the people that are suffering are those that don't have resources to leave the country.
South Sudanese community leaders and activists discuss how to end the conflict. Tomorrow, in the final segment of the Diaspora series, my colleague John Tanza engages panelists on the benefits of an independent South Sudan. Two Nigerian nationals and two Sudanese men have been indicted in a U.S. court on charges of stealing tax refunds. The U.S. Attorney's Office for Western Texas alleges the men obtained personal information from scores of people so they can steal more than $600,000 in annual tax refunds. Three of the men, Nigerian national George Najomo and Sudanese national Ibrahim Alu and George Ismail, have been arrested. An arrest warrant has been issued for the fourth suspect, Dele Akanbi, who is from Nigeria. Two days of talks among members of Kenya's Electoral Commission, the ruling party and opposition have fallen apart amid disagreements over how to conduct fresh presidential elections set for next month. As Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi, there are fears Kenya is headed for a political and constitutional crisis.
The dispute centers in part on two proposed amendments to the electoral law ahead of the October 26 ballot. The ruling Jubilee Party wants the law changed so officials rely more on election results that are submitted via paper ballot, as opposed to those transmitted electronically. The second centers on mandating that the Kenyan Supreme Court order a recount if results are in dispute. The Kenyan Supreme Court struck down President Uhuru Kenyatta's August 8th electoral win. citing irregularities in the way the results were transmitted. The court said earlier this month that electronically transmitted results were neither transparent nor verifiable, as required by law. The opposition says the ruling party's attempt to push the proposed changes through in the National Assembly should not be done during an election season. They argued that such an effort will tie the hands of the Electoral Commissioner. In walking out of the discussions Thursday, the opposition said the talks did not address their issues nor those raised by the court. Senator James Orengo is a lawyer and member of the opposition.
We came here in good spirit and thinking that this consultative process was a good idea. And we were ready, we prepared our papers. We had a lot that the groundwork we have done. We have used the courts also to make sure that the law is clear. But it looks like this is an exercise in futility, and participation in these deliberations make no further sense.
The opposition also is demanding the resignation of members of the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, or IEBC, who are accused of bungling the August vote. Additionally, the opposition wants the government to cancel a contract with a Dubai-based firm, Al Ghurair Printing and Publishing, that printed the paper ballots used in the earlier election. The opposition alleges the company, which printed 1.2 million extra ballot papers, was part of a plan to rig the election. There was no response from the company. The IEBC says it is too late to make such changes. Its chairman, Wafula Chebukati, also says the commission hopes the proposed laws will not affect the agency's operations.
We don't need any more laws to give Kenyans an election on 26th of October. But if Parliament passes the laws, I've also said I hope those laws will not change the framework we have put in place, because if they do so, then they'll put us in a very precarious situation.
Despite the dispute, Senator and Deputy Speaker Kithure Kindiki says Parliament will go with its plan to amend the laws. He is calling on the opposition to participate.
If parliamentarians want to amend even the existing law, it's up to them. But what we are not going to allow is the convolution of agenda, where an agenda which is taking place in the legislature is used to forestall a consultative meeting which has been called by an election manager, and which meeting doesn't have the mandate anyway to change anything. Change can only happen in the legislature where that bill is being discussed.
Opposition leader Raila Odinga has called on his supporters to take to the streets starting Monday for a rally over the electoral process. In 2016, a similar protest planned by the opposition turned deadly. After weeks of demonstrations, the electoral commission has resigned, paving the way for new officers. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
And that's our show for this Thursday. We leave you with the song Bemba Ma by S. Caro.
Bambe makaimo moya garwa saki. Bambe makaimo moya garwa saki. Zaman motor zede mat turu dumara. Zaman matar zede mat turu dumara. Bambe makaimo moya hilo asaki. Bambe makaimo moya hilo asaki. Wasini dunga mayan me fare. Wasini dunga mayan me fare. Aparo e me ajirojini kusende unakwario.
We've been listening to S. Caro with the song Bambe Ma. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Thanks for being here. We'd like to know what you think about the show. You can find us online at southsudan@voanews.com or check us out on our Facebook page, South Sudan in Focus. Tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Marana Madairo.
zaman baradze de marana madairu.